Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the C-Squared podcast with Corey and Curtis. Today, we are here with Mr. John Davis of the band Conan. We are super excited to have him. He's been in the industry for a minute, so he's going to be dropping a variety of industry insights for us, some knowledge bombs for all of you. So pay attention and have your notepads out. But before we get going, I just want to say thank you for joining us today. We definitely appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here. So, thanks for flying me out to Canada as well. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be.
Yeah, not a problem. Did you get the large box of chocolates, the giant stuffed teddy bear, and the strippers?
Yeah, you know? The strippers are on the way, but I've had a nap, so I'll be okay when they get here, I think.
All right. And so, for those who may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, and that kind of a thing, do you want to just give a brief intro into who is John Davis?
Okay, so I am a 45-year-old man from Liverpool in England. I am the lead singer in a heavy metal band, doom metal band called Conan. I also have a record label, Blackbow Records. I have a management agency, which is called Black Skull Services, with my wife, Sarah. And I am the founder of SceneGen, which is a software platform aimed at networking and management within the entertainment industry at large.
Very cool.
Awesome. And I have a small follow-up. Are you a big fan of Robert E. Howard?
Well, I of course enjoy the Conan stories. I still read them from time to time, go over the ones. I think I've read them all now, but yeah, I'm a big fan. And I'm a fan of that type of sword and sorcery and mythology in general, you know, stories that he didn't write. You know, I grew up listening to, watching the Conan movies, obviously, but then there was also Clash of the Titans and Jason and the Argonauts. So, in a nutshell.
Who aren't complete nerds, Robert E. Howard is the original creator of Conan the Barbarian. So I had to toss that in there. But I'll let Curtis ask the real industry questions right now.
before we move on, or correct me if I'm wrong though, John, isn't a lot of your stuff also more inspired by Lord of the Rings type stuff too? Or am I crazy?
That's in there too. Like that whole like type of movie and type of storyline, that was my main aim when I first started Conan. That was the inspiration that I clung to very early on when I didn't really have an idea of what this would become. Sure. Obviously, it's easier to write stuff now because there's sort of a track record that you can take inspiration from. But right at the very beginning, I would literally just read Conan books, write the odd line down, and then that would make me think of a certain riff, and then I'd record that riff on my phone, and that's how the songs were created, just from reading books and watching movies, you know. And it was as simple as that. Now it's almost like less interesting now the older you get, because you kind of like you read those stories a little bit less because you don't kind of need to anymore, if you know what I mean. It's weird. Like if I'm coming up riffs now, it's sort of like I'll be driving the kids to school and I'll hum something into my phone, so it's a lot more mundane.
Fair. Okay, so now onto the real questions here. So the very first thing we got is about, okay, so how did you get signed to Napalm? Because I mean, you guys are kind of a niche band, you got doom, you got fantasy, that type of thing. That's a pretty big label. So how does a doom band kind of niche kind of get into a major label like that?
To cut a long story short, they just sent us a message and I had a telephone call with them and he made us an offer. It was as simple as that, really. But just to elaborate a little bit, we were playing a festival in Leipzig, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And the German band Ahab were playing that same festival. Mm-hmm. And we just recently started talking to those guys at that point. And I think they must have recommended us to the guys at Napalm. And I think I got a message from one of the guys in that hub and said, oh, I think Napalm want to talk to you. So I arranged a call, or we had an email from them. I think maybe it was. We had a call with them and I spoke to Seb, who's still our A&R guy at the label. And mm-hmm. He made us an offer, and it was just, we've been on there ever since. You know, we've been on that same label now since really our, well, after Monos came on Burning World Records in the Netherlands, but everything that we've done, pretty much apart from self-releasing, has been on Napalm.
So what was it like kind of transitioning from Burning World to Napalm? Like, what was the difference in kind of care and stuff? Like what is the difference between being on like a big label versus a smaller label like that?
It's mainly because it's like you can tell you're dealing with like a bigger animal, because you can tell that the person you're speaking to has maybe got a bit less time for you, and I mean that without trying to sound disrespectful. Mm-hmm. You can see that you maybe build up less of a personal relationship with the person that, like, your A&R guy, like Jürgen over at Burning World Records, he's a friend now. And then you've got Seb over at Napalm Records, who is lovely, yeah. But I wouldn't know him as well personally. Like, but Jürgen's been, you know, came to the house when we had the studio, and he came and spent the day with us and the family, and we went out for a day trip and stuff. And I'm not sure you was that personal touch. So far we've not had that with Napalm, but in other ways, Napalm have been absolutely great. Like, they are clearly like a very large business. Everything's very organized and very structured with them. And they've been great to deal with. You know, I've really enjoyed them on a business level. And but the personal side isn't there, but that's fine. Of course, it doesn't have to be. They're a business after all. Yeah. But my recollection of our time with Burning World Records was maybe less formal. There wasn't a contract for it before we released Monos with Burning World Records.
Yeah.
There was a formal contract with them, whereas everything is set contractually with Napalm. And I think that's probably the main thing. Things are locked down contractually and, you know, more strictly with a bigger label.
Yeah, more business, more formal. I get it.
Yeah.
Corey, did you have any follow-ups on that before we go to the next one?
Oh, no, not on that one.
All yours.
All right. So actually, this is a question that I know a lot of people are gonna want to know the answer to, because this is the goal for pretty much anybody listening to this podcast, because a lot of the people listening to this are smaller, newer bands, and their goal is to become full-time in the industry. So how did you transition into being full-time in the industry? What were kind of the steps or the path that you took?
I was very lucky, because my wife was able to help, and so on a financial level, there was a lot less pressure on me than maybe other people. We had a burgeoning touring schedule, so I could rely on sort of like quite a long period of touring that I knew was coming up. And we also had a recording studio just at the house we just bought. And that, you know, we could see that was going to generate some income. So it came to the push in sort of early to mid 2013, I think, when I decided, just after we'd been on tour with Bong Ripper, and I was getting told off for taking too much annual leave. And I was sort of on the cusp of making that decision anyway. And I remember, we're not together now, but Holly, I remember her saying, someone in the office was asking when I was going to be in next. And I remember I was driving back from tour in the van. I was exhausted. And I said, and I'd actually been on that tour. I had to do redundancy consultations, and I just recovering from Bell's palsy, which was stress related, and I just thought, you know what, fuck it, sorry for swearing, I'm just going to leave the job, and I'm going to do music full time. So it was sort of like, it was kind of planned, but I wasn't planning on dropping it just then.
Mm-hmm.
But I just made that leap in mid 2013. But I was fortunate because I was out, there was less pressure on me financially. You know, I have children and had children then, they were younger then, obviously. So it really wasn't the best of times really to do it. You know, I had a lot of responsibilities. Fortunately it's worked out, but it was a big risk. And one I would suggest, if someone else is going to try and do the same thing, I would suggest that they think long and hard about whether or not they are going to be able to stick with it when times get tough, because that the decision for me to stick to music really created a lot of problems on a personal level, which I rode through, and you know, I've come out the other side of it now, still involved in the music industry. But yeah, it was certainly I definitely cracked a few eggs to make this omelet of mine.
Fair. So now, just to follow up on that, so are you saying that they should have a lot of tours booked up, gigs booked up before doing anything? Like,
yeah, I'd suggest have some savings and have a plan. That's just very on a very basic common sense level, just to say, like, if all of my tours for the next 12 months break even or cost me money,
yeah,
will I be able to cope financially? Because when you let go of that day job, if you give one up for your career in music, it's a big shock not receiving a monthly salary.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a good wage, like upwards of £40,000 a year, and I gave that up to work in the music industry full time because it was something I was passionate about. But it was a big leap. So my recommendation is to really plan ahead and make sure you got some money set aside, because you'll burn through your merch sales, you'll burn through your income from your tours if you're enough to get on the road, and obviously in the current climate.
Yeah,
but relying on touring income would be kind of not a good idea, I don't think.
Yeah, not right now.
Not right now. You know, for sure, at some point soon, hopefully, it will become a safer bet once more.
Just out of curiosity, how did you guys make income during the last year without the tours? Because you guys were always on tour, at least.
Yeah, well, two things really: merch sales, some help from the government. I took a job with the Home Office, so I'm currently working as a servant.
Fair.
So all of those things have kept the wolf from the door.
Sure.
And actually just managing my money quite well. Sure. Sarah, my wife, and I managed to buy a house in lockdown.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
So, yeah, as you can see, we're not finished painting yet. But we've done well. We've worked together and really come through the other side of it. Hopefully we're sort of we're at the other end of the whole lockdown thing now. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, really just cutting costs, not spending money on things that were not necessary. Yeah. And the little bits and bobs that were coming in, just trying to make as much use of them as possible. You know, if I had some money come in, I would invest that in merch, because I knew that, you know, £200 worth of t-shirts could make £600 worth of income, and just trying to be businesslike in that way, in a way that really I've not really been so conscientious about so far.
Yeah.
So to made like a real stab of the merch side, really, really, really worked hard on that to make ends meet, and just so far it's been great.
Cool. So Next question I have for you is, so you guys have played with some pretty big bands. You guys have also done some big tours/festivals and stuff. What was so far to date, do you think was your best tour or show festival type thing that you guys have done?
I'll pick out a couple, actually. Touring with the Cavalera Conspiracy, and what we did, like a UK run with those guys, and we played, I think it was like 5 or 6 shows, mm-hmm. and getting to share a stage with those, like, you know, Max Cavalera, Igor Cavalera, and the other guys. Obviously, Max and Igor are the in terms of like hero worship, two people that all three of us in the band had grown up listening to, like absolutely massive Sepultura fans, massive Nail fans, and getting to see them every day and hang out with them. And I got up on stage and did Motorhead, Ace of Spades every night with Max Cavalera and the rest. And that was just like insane. Secondly, we played with Sleep a couple of times, like one standout show for them, and really a pivotal moment for the band, really, in terms of our profile, was back in 2012. We had a UK tour, a European tour in the works. And I was chatting with the promoter over in Oslo, mm-hmm. about playing in Oslo on the tour. And he wrote to me and said, well, instead of playing in Oslo on the tour, why don't you come and play in Oslo with Sleep like 3 weeks later? And I was like, wow, okay. So I got in touch with him we kept in touch, and he flew us out there for a one-off show with Sleep, nice. In Oslo. In the venue was called Beitong, if I'm not wrong, maybe other, but it was just a one-off show. And we got to share a dressing room with them, and got to just like have a beer with them. And I saw Matt Pike get undressed right next to me, and I didn't know what. So I was trying to talk to him about amplifiers, and he just starts getting undressed. It was kind of weird. I don't think people would, they certainly wouldn't share their dressing room now, I dare say. Yeah. But it was just like a really cool time for the band, because we were just getting started then. And it was awesome to be able to go and play such a big show. I remember when we arrived at the venue, they all got out of their tour bus, and they had like crew and everything. We actually walked up the road a mile with our guitars in hand from the hotel. And I think that was a good example of just like the difference between us and them at that point. Mm-hmm. But we've been lucky enough to fly all over the world. You know, we've played shows in Australia several times, New Zealand several times, mm-hmm. To Japan. We went and played like some insane shows in Moscow and St. Petersburg, as well as USA and Canada several times. Mm-hmm. First show we had cancelled for lockdown, first time round, was in Sao Paulo. Mm-hmm. So we've come from nowhere really to get like an international reputation. And it's just like opened up all of these possibilities for traveling and seeing the world. I'm really proud of, you know, really proud that we've stuck with it and kept going, even though we don't feel remarkable. I think what we've done has been really good so far in terms of getting out there.
Yep, 100%. That kind of leads into Corey's next question, actually.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yep. You've done a lot of touring prior to obviously the pandemic, and we're hoping that all of this will be over soon and people can get back to touring. So since that's going to be happening soon, what are your tips for bands going on tour to make that tour the most successful it can be?
Be careful setting a budget, and make sure that you've carefully planned out your income and your income and your expenditure on that tour, and be careful about making sure you're not driving too far between shows, especially in America, because some of the drives can be really far over there. Try and research the promoters that you're going to work with in advance, because most are amazing and some aren't. So it's good to talk to bands who've also played with those particular promoters. That's a really important tip, because very early on we've played shows with promoters that we didn't know very well, and on the very rare occasion, fortunately for us, you come unstuck a little bit. You know, you don't have accommodation when you thought you did, so you have to drive. Like, I remember one night we played the Netherlands, and the accommodation, they didn't have anything arranged, so they tried to put us up in a local squat. When we got there, they wouldn't have us, so we ended up driving home all the way from I think it was Amsterdam, all the way back up to Liverpool in England, which is quite a long way. We just thought, sorry, we'll just drive home. It was the last show of the tour. I think just planning ahead and being businesslike about all that stuff is, even though it might be a bit boring, it definitely pays off in the end.
So now, what about in regards to touring and stuff like that? Now, you were talking a little bit about budgeting. Can you kind of go over a little bit about that in a little bit more detail? Because I think that's one thing a lot of bands don't really look into very much.
Yeah, don't be afraid to create a budget and a spreadsheet that shows a negative at the end. I think very early on in Conan's touring, I would always try and, like, I'd do a budget for a tour, and mm-hmm. I would always, what if we got these merch sales, just to try and appease my own worries. And I think really I was doing that to try and appease the worries of, you know, my wife, mm-hmm. appease the worries of the other guys in the band, even though I always took full financial responsibility for anything. I never mm-hmm. expected, you know, I bought the van myself, things like that. So it was always on me financially. But I would just try and ensure that if you're gonna set a budget, don't be afraid to paint the worst case scenario rather than be overly optimistic. Because very, very early on, most tours will make a loss.
Yeah, fair enough.
When we first started touring, like, factoring in the costs of the vehicle was something that I was a bit naive about. I was lucky because through my job at the time, I could get a van for £30 a day. But you try and get a driver now, it's going to cost you at least £150. And then you got fuel. And depending on who you rent it through, you have to pay VAT on top of that. So mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of costs which people just don't expect. I remember the first time we toured in America. We've been on tour with Youth and Mammoth in Europe, went on our first US tour, and we had it budgeted quite well, but we didn't know until the very last day that there was a mileage charge on the van rental.
Oh no!
Yeah, so because I hadn't read the contract, even though our tour manager had shown us everything. So mm-hmm. there was the mileage charge on the van of, I think it was about $5,000.
Oh.
So that took us into a negative. So we come home from that tour without two pennies to rub together. So that wasn't very much fun. I'm glad to say every other tour since then has been a huge success in that way. But that first one was a real eye opener because it was like a big loss. So I had to take that on the chin. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah, you live and learn. I think that's all we got on that question. So I think next one's Corey.
Oh yeah, definitely. So obviously I've said a couple of times, a lot of the people listening to this show are newer or younger bands. What are your top pieces of advice for the new younger bands out there who are just getting going?
Try not to sound like the bands who are popular at that time if you want to be interesting. So I think there are a lot of bands out at the moment who sound very similar to the leading bands in their scene. And I think that's a shame. And I don't think they'll be remembered very long after, you know, when all's done and dusted later on in life. Try and maintain a level of originality, because that'll make it more worthwhile for you. Don't copy too much, even though Phil Anselmo once famously recommended just like, literally copy every cool band that you know, even though you could say Pantera really didn't sound like too many other bands at all in their own style. But there are a lot of bands now who sound quite like Pantera, if you get me. Try and be a leader in terms of how you sound. That's something that was always central to me. Like, you get compared to bands, well, that's cool, but try and just look within rather than outward when you're writing music. I don't know, sort of like kind of it worked for us because I didn't tend to try and copy the bands too much, with the exception of Slamatics, who I completely ripped off in the early days because that was all like a play. And yeah, that's my advice. Try and maintain some originality if you can.
Except for ripping off the Slamatics, which you have to do. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, if we all rip off Slamatics, then it'll soon get boring then. So please don't rip off Slamatics. Leave that to me.
Shout out to Slamatics, who always should, more people should be listening to them at all times.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, one more follow-up question on that from me, at least, John, is so is there, how do I want to put this? So is there like one specific thing that a new band should do and know well to succeed in the industry? Like one thing, just a specific thing, other than network?
Buy a cheap van.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because when you go on, or you want to make some money, right? So the biggest expense is renting a van. And very early on when you have not much money, you want to at least bring home a little bit from the tour so that when you get home, your other half will let you go on tour again next time. Or the other guys in the band will want you to go on tour again next time.
Mm-hmm.
It feeds into areas that you don't expect. Like you come home from tour and you've got to spend that 150 quid a day. That can be a bummer. If you come home and your van's already, you bought it for £700 off a local builder and it smells of cement, but at least it gets you from A to B at no additional costs, then that's been my advice to a few friends who've been in bands, is to get a van.
Sure.
Because if you want to go on tour, then it'll save you so much money in the long run. Like so much money, seriously. I bought our white van in 2015 in January. It cost me £10,000 or 11 maybe. I got a loan to buy it. And then spent about £6,000 on making it into like a tour bus. And if I think, I'm going to estimate it's probably saved me about 100, maybe £80,000.
Wow.
In paying for a van and driver, the amount of times that we've gone on for weekends or like a month long tour, saved a hell of, that sounds like a huge figure, but, and I didn't give that too much thought. So I hope I don't embarrass myself when I get my calculator out later, but I bet you any money, it's probably somewhere around there.
Wow. That's crazy. Mm. Okay. I think we're almost at the end here. So is there anything else that you personally would like to say before we end off, or anything else you want to cover rather?
Well, I've like I mentioned earlier on, one of the cool things I'm working on at the moment is a software platform called SceneGen.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing as we're talking about touring and the business side of being on the road, mm-hmm. I, around about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, had this idea of creating a software platform, which is like a networking tool for bands initially, because that's the world I am most familiar with, but like expanding out of the entertainment industry at large.
Mm-hmm.
Try and cover some of the gaps in terms of professional networking that you can't do on social media or don't work so great on social media, and build into that some of the management tools that I think other software platforms try and do, but don't link it to any sort of interconnectedness. So if you can imagine something like LinkedIn, but then with the ability to, within it, create a day sheet, and then from that it creates the contract, from that it creates an invoice. You can send an invoice in the software platform, and that can be paid within the software platform. So there's a messaging function within there, you know, a detailed messaging function. So it's to try and reduce the reliance on unsuitable offerings from, you know, the world of social media. Because like running your band on any one day, you'll be using Dropbox, Bandcamp, Instagram, Facebook, emails, text, and WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like I say, about 2 years ago, got serious about this idea, and myself and a small team of developers, all of whom are musicians, and we got a designer over in Seattle, and also our friend Adrian, who works for a leading digital agency in Belgium, is looking after our communications and marketing. But our development team, you know, we got three really cool people, all musicians. Morten from Copenhagen, he's in the band Beth Mora. Got Tanya, she's in Bismuth. And then you got Martin, who's a friend of Morton's and works in Copenhagen and is a part-time DJ. So we're developing this thing which was inspired by how in the early 90s, the underground metal scene in America particularly tried to create a network of contacts. So you would have this magazine called Book Your Own Effing Life. And it was a printed magazine that was printed by, you know, devoted scene people in certain cities around the USA. And you'd be able to go up in your local record store and it would be in the van for the whole of the tour. So say, for example, you got a day off in Ohio. Oh, I'd like to do a basement show in Ohio. Is there anyone listed in Book Your Own Effing Life in Ohio? And nothing like that exists now. The alternative is put a message on Facebook and you're telling the whole world who contacts then, you know, and we thought it'd be really cool to develop this software platform. So we're on with that now. You know, we're at the process of building the front end of it. And we hopefully soon we'll be able to invite people to start testing it with us, which is really exciting.
Nice. What's your ETA to have it fully completed, do you think?
Well, I've been given an ETA now and it keeps slipping, so I'm not going to give one right now. But the ETA, because we're all working on it in our spare time, it really depends on people's availability and how many hours per week. You know, we're just doing it on the drip at the moment because we have not yet got a product to get an investor interested in. But we're working towards that goal. But we've come a long, long way from having like an idea to having a clickable prototype, which we do have. And we're just doing the coding now. So we're building the front end, the back end, most of it's built in the back end. And we're just building the pages as we go along, which is not something I personally am actively involved in because I don't have the skills and more the idea guy. But hopefully early next year, we'll have something which we can invite people to start testing.
Nice. Cool. Well, that sounds very interesting.
Yeah, thank you. If people want to register, they can go to scenegen.io. I don't know whether you can drop that in somewhere, but scenegen.io. We have a holding page now where people can leave their mail and we can keep them up to date with developments. But we think it's going to be pretty huge and we're putting a hell of a lot of effort in. So it's going to be a professional network and a management tool just for the entertainment industry. So it will be like all the good things of social networking, but only those that apply to the professional world. And it'll mean that you're not getting messages about stuff on your Facebook inbox. You know, you're not having to reply to you 1 minute and then reply to those of the next on the same platform. Hopefully it'll be cool. That's what I've been doing and focusing on for 2 years.
Cool. Well, it sounds exciting. So if you can remember to DM me the link so I don't forget about it, then I will drop notes. Other than that, I think we are done unless Corey has any questions.
No, I am good on my end.
All right. Well, thank you, John, very much for coming on the show. And with that, party on, Corey.
Party on, guys.
Party on. Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C-Squared.